Hey, hey, friendos. Welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Joss Aroo, and with us this week is our guest host, T. Eberle. Tyler, how are you?
Good. How are you doing this week, Joss?
Good. I heard a little rumor you're feeling mildly unwell.
Mildly. It's that time of year. I got two little kids. It makes for, fun little colds run into the house.
Right. But your hope is that talking about Marvel Champions is going to really bring up your energy.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. How can it not? It always gets me excited.
How can it not? So, we've started to see some teasers about what the next wave is is going to be. We're at almost 3 months since I thought we were going to start something. So that's exciting.
It is.
I don't know. Have you been paying attention?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like every Thursday I would go jump over into like the main Marvel Champions Discord and go to the leaks area and see, is there anything coming? And because I think one of the Fantasy Flight employees has been in there saying, no, nothing this week. So I've been looking for that. And then we finally get these couple images of the brick wall and then the outline of, I can't remember who it's supposed to be. I'm not as great with my X-Men or X-Force.
Yeah, so it looks like Cable.
Cable, that's what it was, yeah.
And it's in part, I'm only able to bring this knowledge in because I play Marvel Snap.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know a little bit of the character Cable, but it's very, very little.
Right. I kind of devoured X-Men comics religiously when I was a young teenager and stuff like that, which is now many, many moons ago. And so a lot of these things came quite a bit later. So they're all, I'm accumulating knowledge through kind of other things other than comics. Anyway, that looks like Cable. So it looks like we've got something like an X-Force box. I think my understanding is Mr. Sinister is also a villain associated with X-Force. So that all makes a lot of sense.
Which is, I think, a lot of speculation was we would, in the second box, we probably had Mr. Sinister involved. Yeah. And so I think it makes sense. I'm excited for it. The one kind of X-Men hero that I'm hoping maybe comes in this wave would be Nightcrawler. I'd love to see Nightcrawler.
I'm trying to remember. I did look it up to see. I mean, we're now like providing almost useless information, so hilarious. But anyway, I think Nightcrawler might have been one of the, there's like a lot of people that are X-Men that have also been in X-Force kind of thing, so that could show up anywhere. And then we heard on they interviewed Caleb Grace on Marvel Champions Monthly, and he confirmed that there's going to be three X-Men boxes. Or mutant boxes, I guess, to put it a different way. So that'll kind of be a cycle of about the same size as, the Avengers and then Guardians and stuff like that. And so, X-Men, X-Force kind of being like Avengers, Guardians type thing. So that's about the scale of the thing that we're getting. So we were going to have a lot of amazing allies for Cyclops to include and all those other things. So all these things that are interacting with X-Men and mutants are going to really have a lot of life.
Yeah. I mean, heck, it might get to the point where we have a season, no more X-Men or no more mutants.
Oh. Oh my gosh. Right. So poor Innsmouth Bear jumped the gun on that one. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm excited. It's been a little while and I think it'll be nice to get,
It should be.
And we might even have some new content out in time for the Con of Heroes, actually.
Ah, yeah, that'll be kind of cool if that stuff gets out for those who are able to go to the con.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I will not be able to be there, but...
Oh, Tyler. Okay, we'll patch you in. We'll patch you in.
Exactly.
Well, last time we did some of the remote stuff, right?
We did, yeah. So and maybe I'll have to reach out to a few other people that are not there and see if we can do some remote stuff again. Because yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I look forward to even from here at home seeing all the pictures and everything happening. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, and Kennedy Hawk's been releasing the new standard set that they created and all those other things. So there's a lot of fun content to engage with. So it's not just kind of playing your regular Marvel Champions games over a weekend.
Right.
Cool. Well, let's talk about this season. You already alluded to what's going on. And so this is our first round after Scarlet Witch rewrote the world with kind of uttering no more Avengers. So this is a no Avengers, no Avengers heroes, no Avengers allies, no Avengers traded anything round. And so instead we have that each person gets to pick either Champions, Guardians, Web Warriors, or X-Men as their faction. And then from there, they, you know, as the season progresses, they'll have to include characters from other factions and a certain number of characters from their faction and all those sorts of things. And then we have by far the most, I don't know, disorienting is the right word, but, you know, like the overwhelmed by choice type of round where not right. only was everybody picking their faction, but they also had three heroes to pick from once they picked a faction. So there's 12 heroes this round. And we'll talk about what the heroes were when we start looking at the results. But anyway, there's, you know, like I said, there was Champions, Guardians, Web Warriors, X-Men. And so people had a lot of choice and there's a lot of opportunity for regret for choice. I think one of the small things that we saw once it was understood a little bit better is that the Patreons were voting for the round three right. and five heroes so that people right. who were worried about getting stuck with Drax and Groot in bad matchups, for example, knew that the people that were picking that faction of Guardians were the ones that were actually going to be voting on the heroes that were taking place in those rounds. So you probably wouldn't get stuck with an undesirable hero. So I think that helped a little bit because I think that feeling a little bit punished for your decisions was going to be really challenging.
Right.
So what did you end up going with?
Well, within my alliance, we decided that we would each take a different faction. That way we always had our own choice. We didn't have to feel like we were hindered by someone else picking. So we each chose a different faction. I went with the Web Warriors.
Yep.
And it wasn't just because Ghost Spider was there as an option.
I was wondering.
I chose not to go with her. I gave her a shot, but I was like, I don't think her in leadership at this round is going to be the best option. And so I gave her a shot. I even gave Spider-Ham a shot, and I enjoyed it. But I decided I wanted to go with Spider. And that was just that was a lot of fun. I've only played her a little bit, and really getting the feel for how the kit works and how it really builds up. And once you get everything laid out there, it's just like I feel like I can do whatever I want. It gave me a feel of very similar to Ironheart. Once you get fully built up, you choose. You control the entire thing, and that's not much that the villain can really do to you, it felt like. So that was what I went with this round.
Right, right. Well, and you know, I think also similar to Ironheart is the kit is much more important than the cards that you add.
Right, absolutely.
So I think there's that too. And so those are things that can be complaints. I mean, those are the things that can hurt the longevity of some of those heroes, I would say, right? Yeah. People get really excited where every new event is something you look at with Ms. Marvel as an example.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's pros and cons to all these things, but they sure come out of the gate as very strong heroes. Yeah, cool. I took X-Men. Well, we can check in with that a little bit later, but I think I want to revisit what you were talking about with Spider, because our round was actually Risky Business with Wrecking Crew versus Standard right. 2. A relatively easy scenario despite the scenario 2 or the standard 2, and we'll talk right. about some of the details of Risky Business, but it's kind of known to be the easiest, if not at least one of the easiest of the scenarios that we have in the whole box. So yeah. having your time while you're learning how to play Spider to build Spider up and those sorts of things, you had access to being able to do that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, with risky business, yeah. I mean, it's an easier easier encounter overall. And yeah, you can kind of game it with really just kind of letting Norman kind of wait there before you really go after it, and giving yourself the chance to build up and keep those criminal enterprise tokens, not building up too much. So yeah, it made it a little easier. It gave her that chance to get all of her tech out there. But I think the hard part really comes with the risky business is really once you do flip him, not letting him flip back if possible. Because I was just, you know, right before we started talking, I was sitting at all the cards, looking at it, and like there are 14 cards that have a boost that can take counters off of his, you know, his madness counter or his state of madness side. And so you really had to be prepared for that ability of him to just flip back. And okay, it doesn't seem like a big deal, except for when you flip him back again, he's doing that indirect damage on you, and you don't really want to deal with that as much as possible, especially in a solo champions league. You don't want to take as much. You want to limit the amount of damage you're taking.
Right. So managing your health in this scenario is definitely one of the things you have to pay attention to. And you do actually see it in the scores that there wasn't a huge number of people that had maxed out health, actually.
Right.
Maybe compared to usual. But interestingly, though, I also, when looking through the decks, did not see a lot of people that packed endurance. So people decided they weren't going to try to manage their health fully, I guess. But so, yeah, anything you want to add about risky business? We didn't really get into the details of it, but what are some important things people should remember about risky business?
I think so. You gotta make sure you got that criminal enterprise out. You've got, you got to pay attention to those guards coming out that are going to make it a little more difficult to flip him if you need to. You've got those all of the day's work. That's going to automatically flip him from his villain side. Like those are inevitable to come up and ruin your day. I don't think there's really that much really to it. You got to make sure you're taking that 4 indirect damage, even when you flipped from stage 1 to stage 2 as well. That's being revealed there. So you have that 4 damage you're going to take once you flip from stage 1 to 2.
Right. So the key piece is that when he is in stage 1 and you flip him from Norman Osborn's side to Green Goblin's side, he does 3 indirect damage to each player in hero form. So if you're able to flip that while you're an alter ego, you can, that's a way to save 3 damage. And then as you said, when you go to stage 2, it is just 4 indirect damage and you have no choice. And at the point where you have him in Green Goblin form and you've hit stage 2, you're really trying to avoid ever having him flip back. That's
absolutely, yeah.
So whether that is doing things like target acquired or setting up your board so that you can basically burst through stage 2 and not risk flipping back, all those sorts of things. I mean, 4 damage is not a terribly huge amount either. There's lots of other ways to deal with it. But in terms of developing an overall strategy, that's kind of what you're doing. You're trying to make sure you hit Goblin 2 in Goblin form, which of course you have to, because that's how it plays out, but not actually flip back. So you don't want him to flip. You don't want to have to take that indirect damage twice.
Right. And honestly, I forgot the fact that that first form was only dealing it to heroes. And so it wasn't until my third game, I think, that I realized, oh yeah, that's hero. I can use an ally to flip him and not deal with that that damage. So when I remember that, I was like, okay, I can do a little bit better maybe here. Not taking a little extra damage.
And this is definitely a good example of the type of scenario. It's good to get some practice games in to really remember the flow of it. And to develop some strategies. When we talk about the decks, we'll see some people actually took some different strategies with these. And then the modular was Wrecking Crew. What's worth knowing about the Wrecking Crew modular? A modular that I love, by the way.
I was gonna say, yeah, I'm super happy that this is the modular we got with this scenario. I mean, especially with Norman and risky business being kind of something you can really plan for and kind of work around the mechanics of the scenario. Adding the Wrecking Crew is almost like adding a secondary villain, and they're all villainous. You've got that secondary villain in there that can change things up, and at the same time, because you're dealing with Norman, you can almost ignore him for a bit and just focus on taking out whatever minion from the Wrecking Crew is out there facing you. So yeah, they're all villainous, so they're all gonna flip a boost card when they attack you or if they scheme, which could be, you know, that could be a little more difficulty as well. Like, you're not expecting Norman to do much scheming because you might flip down to Alter Ego while he's in villain form, and so you have to worry about it. But the Wrecking Crew is still there, possibly, especially get Thunderball out, you know, throwing a lot more scheme onto the main scheme. They each have a little different thing. I think, if I remember right, they're very similar to the Wrecking Crew scenario in terms of what they're kind of doing. You know, Pile Driver's got Retaliate. Bulldozer's going to overkill on your allies. Thunderball's going to deal an extra damage to you when he attacks. And Wrecker is going to get an extra +2 attack if you're not defending. And so, yeah, you got to watch out for those. And they two of them have 3 boost icons, and 2 of them have the 2 boost icons. So they're coming at you one way or another, it feels like. Mm-hmm. If you get their side scheme, you've got another Retaliate out there as well.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And, you know, on top of that, Green Goblin actually has relatively high attack, right? He has 3 in stage 1 and 4 in stage 2. So there is definitely a way to get yourself into trouble against this scenario. You know, just a couple... having a poorly set up board and then having a couple bad flips can definitely sink you quickly because, as you mentioned, they have a villainous. Green Goblin has a big attack. You know, if you have to take a gang up or something like that, you could really find yourself into some trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's definitely something you have to watch out for. I think it added a nice difficulty level onto a relatively easy scenario. It's a fun encounter set to add in general, I think.
Right. And then we were actually playing Standard 2, so I guess gang up's not the correct card, but what do you think were some key things that impacted us from Standard 2?
I think depending on which hero you're playing, you've got that formidable foe card out there, so you're not going to easily be able to just stun or confuse Norman or Green Goblin. So you've got
to get that impactful.
He's steady. You've got to get 2 of them on there. So yeah, that's going to be the main effect that you got really from the Standard 2 set. And hopefully you didn't do what I did in my first 2 test games and have it on the expert mode only side where I was adding extra threat each turn as well. Like, why is this so difficult? But so anyway, that's definitely the biggest thing you got to deal with. And then you got a few extra surge cards in there. If I remember right, the total annihilation. So you got 2 of those out there, which is surging. He's not only going to attack you, but which is overkill, but he's also going to surge into another card. So you could surge into one of the Wrecking Crew. You can surge into another total annihilation, which is definitely affecting. You've got the mob mentality card that's fishing for one of those Wrecking Crew or even one of the other, minions from the Risky Business set that could make your day a little more difficult.
Right. So the important thing here, I guess, is that, you know, because of these things like Total Annihilation that have Surge or make Piercing and Overkill, there's ways to find yourself in trouble kind of just from card combinations that you draw.
Right. Absolutely. You could be in a world of hurt, especially if you've got one of those Wrecking Crew minions out there, and then you get their combined effort card, and they're activating against you maybe a second time this round now. There are definitely things that could make this round this really difficult on you if you're not prepared for it.
Right. So, and then as we mentioned before, there's a leadership, and there was no Avenger traded cards, which with leadership meant things like White Tiger, you know, very reliable cards that you often will include, weren't available to you. So that was actually neat, just kind of playing leadership and then not having access to a lot of the standard cards that you might have become used to including with leadership.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, early on in the game, having so many Avengers, I mean, it was all Avengers stuff and spending so much time there. It was like, okay, I have to think, what cards do I normally put in here that I need to make sure I'm not putting in there. Like, I can't boost my hero health by just throwing Blade out there. Yeah, definitely had to be a little more intentional. Like, okay, what do I got going on? Thankfully, I could still include Nick Fury and Maria Hill.
Right. Well, and you know, honestly, this felt like in, you know, in collectible card games, you know, whether they're digital or real, when they do revised core sets, right? Where there's all these cards that you kind of became used to, and they cycle them out of being available in your in the regular mode of play of competitive play, for example. So that was kind of neat, right? So you had to, there was cards that you were just really used to including, and now you don't get to.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So, well, tell us about your round. How did you kind of alluded to a few things, but how did it go overall?
Yeah, well, I was able to pull out 3 wins, 7, 8, and 9 turns, respectively. And yeah, overall, well, I think you'd mentioned earlier that, yeah, you didn't see maybe as many people at full extra health. And I, like, in the hero score, I was like 101 instead of the 110, which is the highest you can get for a round. So overall, it went well. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun. I made sure I, you know, included the target it acquired. I had all three of those in my deck as a possibility, so I could always try to have one on the table ready to get rid of one of those boost icons that are taking tokens, madness tokens away from Green Goblin. Other than that, I mean, it was a very gray leadership deck. The only blue cards I included were Maria Hill, Make the Call, and Rapid Response. And I was really just like, I wanted those there. I wanted to get Nick Fury out and to help him kind of help cycle through my deck. So I actually had a 45 card deck, which seems kind of crazy when there's specific cards you want to go. You don't want those buried, but I was making sure there was ways for me to be able to cycle through things as quick as possible. You know, because I was going Web Warriors, having, you know, Web Life of Destiny, Destiny, Web of Life and Destiny. So any of those Web Warrior heroes that are, you know, coming out and then leaving there, getting me another chance to kind of draw something and see if I can get my tech stuff up for Spider. So yeah, that was kind of the main thing. I was looking at some other decks on Marvel CDB in advance for Spider, and I came across one that had used Symbiote Suit in there as well. So I threw that in my deck, and I think only one game that I did, I actually threw it out there, and it was great. I threw it out there on the last turn. So that one I got, like, you know, the extra 10 hit points and everything, which was fun, because I think I was able to burst, if I remember right, I was able to burst through that second phase of Green Goblin pretty quick, because I had the extra attack. I was able to ready up multiple times in the last round because of some of her cards, which were, her All Systems Go card. Being able to ready all of her interface upgrades was so great, because I can ready all that up, use them to spend on more things, use them to ready her up again and attack some more. It was great. So yeah, that was my round. It was pretty straightforward, I feel like, but it was a lot of fun. The other thing I think also was just making sure I didn't put out her signature ally Venom until I had like four of the interfaces out there, so I could spend it, and then Venom could be attacking for five, or if I needed to thwart, she could thwart for five. And that was great. Like, man, I could have gone the direction of just getting a bunch of upgrades attached to Venom and just going crazy right there as well, but I decided to go for a lot of card draw.
Right. Well, and, you know, based on the speed of your rounds, that, you know, probably would have been a viable choice too. So that's kind of that is definitely a neat strategy that you can do with her. You can focus on that Venom, which also conveniently is not the same Venom as any of the other Venoms in the game, so you can actually play them all together.
Which would be fun.
Well, and you know what, you raised an interesting point about being able to play Venom on the last round, right? You know, I often look at some of those things like Snowguard or Venom or the Symbiote Suit as, you know, if you're using them for late game splashes in terms of getting a lot of HP, you know, it's very expensive way to get a lot of HP. I mean, it's the only way to get that much HP, but it's very expensive.
Right.
But what can happen is if getting your deck set up such that you're almost always kind of stalling out in stage two of Green Goblin, not being able to finish him entirely in one turn, you know, you're always getting him close, but not quite all the way there, then you're usually actually going to have these extra resources in that final turn.
Right.
Right. Like that's, I was only when you were talking about that, did it kind of occur to me that that was the case, right? Some of the times you're just really stalling out. You're close, but it's just, it would take an old complete overhaul of your deck to make it so that you would get through all the way. And so you're kind of used to stalling out. So maybe some of these more expensive things in the very final turn are actually reasonable ways as ways to increase how many points you get.
Yeah, I mean, I think that helped a lot. Because, I mean, with when you've got her all of her interface out, that's five resources there straight up. And so a four-cost card is nothing, and yet I still have another two cards in my hand that I can probably pay for as well. And if I get lucky and at least one of those is the all systems go, like I can easily pay for more again. And yeah.
And she has the ready and all those things, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of ways to deal with the board. And usually at that point, you've probably got an ally or two to do some of that work. And anyway,
exactly.
It's just kind of an interesting thing that hadn't really occurred to me that if you feel yourself stalling out on that final turn, maybe instead of trying to figure out how to get the more damage, the other thing you could do is say, well, take advantage of the fact that you stalled out and build up your score.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, so I played Storm. I chose X-Men, and we kind of did a similar thing in our alliance to what you all did. And I finished in 5-7 and 5 turns. The 7-turn one was, you know, I just got a little bit stalled out in the second game, but I did have a really big scare because one of the things we didn't really talk about is Dark Dealings, which is the replacement for Advance in Standard 2, which is the villain schemes with +1. And I got a Dark Dealings when Norman was in Norman form. And I just lucked out and drew, you know, a 2 boost instead of a 3 boost, which would have put it over the top. So this ends up being an important strategic point. If you are willing to risk having that main scheme advance to Dark Dealings, you can play a style where you're flipping almost every turn and kind of, you know, as you mentioned, if you have him in Green Goblin and then flip back to Alter Ego, usually what will happen is he will kind of get himself into Norman form. You know, you can defeat him and then flip back. But of course, if you draw Dark Dealings just after that's happened, which is basically, you know, the thing that happened to me. And then the very fun thing I had was in the final game, I actually managed to have double Lightning Bolt to finish the game off, which was incredible. Like there's so much damage that comes out of that. That's really, she pushes a lot of damage, and I really see why Gondo said, you know, Aggression Storm is amazing, because the amount of damage she can push out is fantastic.
I'll have to give her a bit more of a try. I've only, I think, played one or two games with her, and I struggled with her weather deck to really come to a point where I enjoyed it. And so I need to give her another chance, and maybe I'll enjoy it a bit more, because everyone keeps talking so highly of her. I just haven't enjoyed it as much.
Yeah, I mean, so she definitely packs a bunch of pretty useful cards and a lot of damage in the deck. I came to like, I'm just double check, I always forget the names of cards. So I really came to like this Blast of Wind card, which is her secondary damage dealing card. It does 3 damage to the villain and each minion engaged with the player. It's not an attack, so it deals with guard as well. And then you resolve the special ability on your weather support. Right. Mm. So this is where you really got to make some decisions about what's going on the board, and an easy way to get a whole bunch of thwarting done or threat removal done, right? So if you're on the weather, that gives you the special is the extra two threat removal. You can, you know, flip to that card, hit Blast of Wind, get 2 more and get a whole bunch of damage on the board and stuff like that. So there's a bunch of stuff that's pretty neat with her, where you kind of, as you're playing, you start to see some of these opportunities that do show up. She has access to a lot of damage, but because of the one weather that gives everything attack plus one, those builds that you go with really wide, lots of allies, are really impactful. So she really incentivizes you to build nice big wide boards with lots of allies, which, against this scenario that isn't really overall that threatening, despite some of the things we said, there's a really good opportunity to build your board wide. Pretty
Nice.
fun.
Yeah.
Pretty fun, and I think, in contrast to what we were talking about with Ironheart and Spider before, she's the kind of hero where, you'll kind of find more and more opportunities as things go on. I think the one challenge with the X-Men heroes that want to use allies is Uncanny X-Men is such a great team card that once we have all of our X-Men allies, I don't know how much growth some of those characters like Cyclops and stuff are gonna see after that. But we'll see. We'll see. Let's have a look at the overall results, where again there was 12 heroes, so we're not going to try to go in the most detailed way through everything, but we'll just hit some of the highlights. So heroes that had over a 10% or 10% or over play rate. Cyclops was actually the most popular at 23%, Storm at 16, Spider at 15, and then Ironheart at 10.
And I'm not surprised. It looks like a lot of people have gone the X-Men fashion or faction with all the new stuff and everything. So that's fascinating. And then you got Spider and Ironheart too. Yeah, they're really strong just right out of the gate, just with their own stuff. You don't have to worry too much about the build you have.
And then Ghost Spider and Nebula each only had one person that picked them, and as we'll see, they actually did really well. But that's pretty funny. Because of that, Nebula actually ended up being the top performing one overall with 108.9% average approval rating.
Wow.
Right, just coming from one. Gamora also had just three people that or two people that took yeah two people that took Gamora as well, and so Gamora got second because those people both did really well. And then Storm of the heroes that we were talking about that got picked quite a bit, Storm, Spider, and Cyclops actually did very, very similarly to each other, and all did really well. We saw overall win rates were quite high, and expectedly, but I think that standard two definitely gave an opportunity for you to have to deal with some stuff.
Right. It's
And
fascinating to
then,
see Nova so far on the bottom.
yeah, it is. We saw one person did really well with Nova, and then a couple other people that had two, not three wins were kind of also did Nova. So that's where some of that came from, because Nova
That's
actually
true.
had just a 4% pick rate, so there was probably only three people that picked it.
That makes sense.
And so toward the bottom we saw Spider-Ham, Ms. Marvel, and Nova in terms of overall approval rating, but kind of they still did overall pretty well, not to diminish how any of those heroes did. And then Innsmouth Bear revamped a little bit how XP was working and tried to make the size of the XP window a lot smaller. So for example, we had four heroes that got max XP bonus, which was 10 XP. And this was Nebula, Gamora, Ghost Spider, and Nova. So these were actually all the four heroes that had the fewest people pick them. And then the lowest XP bonus was Ms. Marvel at 8.31. So that difference of 1.62 XP on top of, approval ratings that are around 90 and 100 is definitely a lot smaller than some of the differences we've seen in the past. So people's performance without XP mostly translated into their score.
Which was nice. Yeah, I appreciate, all the listening he did and the work he's done to kind of revamp that. I think it seemed to work really well so far, from what I've seen.
Well, you know, and part of it is, you know, how much as a person who's trying to design the league and be cognizant of, you know, people with picking harder heroes and feeling like they got punished for doing that and things like that, where he's actively worried about that. But the reality of it is, you know, when you back off that, people don't mind because they're like, well, I know which hero I picked. Right.
So exactly.
I think that might be playing into it a bit too, right? If really take your foot off the gas a bit, still make it so you're acknowledging some of the heroes that were a little bit more difficult, but not in a extremely significant way. So, you know, the happy balance might be somewhere around here, or maybe there's a huge overhaul coming anyway. We'll see what's going on in the future. But I think overall, I haven't really seen too much negative discussion around this revamp system, right? There's XP bonuses, but they're not too wide ranging.
Well, and I think he's in the PDF that he's put together for each, all the results. Like you see it spelled out. You see kind of where you're getting it. I think people appreciate that transparency with that as well, and that helps a lot. So
right. And then importantly, the other thing that XP actually does is we got all the tiers or the flights revamped. So there's now four flights plus the training grounds. And to be able to have access to the higher flights, you actually need both. There's XP thresholds for each of them, and you need to be performing at a high enough level to be in there. So people, when they come out of the training grounds, because of the amount of XP they have, they'll be in four. And then if they're continuing to perform well while they're accumulating their XP, then they would bump up to three and two and so on.
Right. They should move up pretty quick fairly if they keep going. Yeah.
Right. But in the past, we would see somebody coming out of the training grounds and be in the middle of flight one right away. So this is nice. There's a sense of progression through the flights, which I think is a really satisfying thing from my own experience of being a little less thoughtful about my score early on when I started. I did have that experience of, you know, I started off in flight three and actually progressed through as I started to clean up my game and play a little smarter. So I think in general, people probably appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was the same with me. Like I slowly moved up. I mean, I've had with the new flights, I'm back down to flight three, but that's fine. It's been a lot of fun working up to try to gain some ground up there.
Yeah. I hear you. And then, you know, I was also looking through the top two flights. There's 8 people and 16 people in flights 1 and 2. And, you know, there's not a lot of trends I think that we see in what the people are picking in those compared to anything else. You know, those heroes that were very rarely picked are obviously not showing up that much in these. So we did see quite a bit of Star-Lord in flight one. And also looking a little bit more carefully at this, I'm going to revise my earlier statement. It actually looks like the hero scores being 110 was actually, I just opened the season 13 round 2 as a comparison point, and it looks like the hero score, so that's the one that's your hero and ally health combined being maxed out. We actually had a higher rate of hitting 110s this round than we did last season on the same round. So I was 100% mistaken in my statement. But whatever. That was my perception of how it felt, because I felt I was really fighting to make sure I had that health in a way that I'm not used to.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, with that just by flipping him, if you get a little extra damage and you're trying to finish him there in one or two rounds, it could be a little more difficult to get that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit more about the strategies, because I think, again, talking about all the decks is going to be really tricky, but just some things that I noticed in the comments that people were posting and looking through the decks and things like that is we did see a lot of variety in terms of how people approached it, approached that early game, whether it was trying to not flip Norman and just kind of build up your board while you're not having to deal with any attacks. He did have a big attack, so you still had to put allies in front if you were letting him attack. Right. Versus, you know, Jarrett was one of the first folks who posted saying that they had, you know, intentionally flipped to Green Goblin as early as possible so that they wouldn't get hit by Dark Dealings.
Mm. Yeah. And I think I actually went over pretty early on this show. Not, maybe not the first turn, but within the first two or three turns, I feel like in that, yeah, I think avoiding that was nice to be able to keep that main scheme on that first side.
Yeah, I mean, if I think the strategy I ended up settling on was, you know, typically, you know, it did depend on the hand, but typically not flipping him on turn one, flipping back to Alter Ego on turn two, and then flipping him at that point.
Mm.
And then, which usually meant I would be doing one more round of flipping back and forth, trying to get the indirect damage right to not actually happen, and then push for the victory with a decent sized board because I had Storm and lots of allies that had tons of attack. So that was kind of how I was doing it. But I really appreciated Jarrett's approach from the perspective of being conservative in terms of not worrying about that main scheme, right? Like being conservative and worrying about the main scheme. I said that backwards.
Right, right.
And then because people tended to be pretty heavy on the allies, obviously this varied by hero, but we did see lots of command team in people's decks. Mm. When I did look through, because I know you and Greg had been talking about target acquired, I was surprised at how few people ultimately we saw with target acquired.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of them now. Yeah, that is fascinating.
And then, you know, really fun. You know, I like when people are doing this sort of thing. We did see a decent number of people choose to bring mass attack. So this is one where you tap your hero and all your allies that share the same trait as your hero, and you get to combine all the attacks to do a bunch of damage without them suffering a bunch of consequential or anything like that. And so this really speaks again to building up the board. We saw lots of people bringing band together because people were going to expect to have allies, and then this is the resource card that is based on the number of allies. I don't know, how do you feel about that card overall?
I mean, I didn't use it. I love that card. I just feel like every time I end up putting it in a deck, it comes out of the time where I'm still trying to get things set up, and I'm like, "Oh, that's just a wasted card. I can't do anything with." So I love it when it hits. When it hits, it's beautiful. I feel like I can do anything, but more often than not, I feel like it ends up being a dead card in my hand. And I'm like, "Well, not only do I not have that, I'm down an extra card for resource or whatever it might be." And so, I think you'd really have to make sure, and maybe this is a perfect round for that because you have a little bit more time to set things up because you can keep Norman out there. And maybe it makes it a little easier early on to build up those allies.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think my assessment of it matches yours, right? The first turn stuff that you're able to build in a solo Champions League game ends up being pretty critical piece to your success, I would say. And so, getting a wasted resource that early on, and it, you know, on the flip side is it's very rarely going to be a double resource in your first turn, right?
Right, so, exactly.
It kind of de-emphasizes the first turn in a way that from a consistency perspective I've found frustrating. So I tend to not include more than maybe one of them in situations where I think they're appropriate. But that, again, that's only in solo Champions League. I think in other situations where, you know, when I've been playing in Scheme League, there's usually been a turn, instead of your score being based on your number of turns, it was kind of finishing the game by turn 12 was a much more common thing. And when you have two heroes, your ability to do things like set up your board, get the villain to this just about to where you're going to advance the villain, and then be able to burst through on your final turn is a really common thing. And so some of these things that take advantage of a big board are way more helpful in that kind of environment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's when you're playing solo, you've got to do a little bit of everything. And so it makes it more difficult when, you have that ability to, my teammate or teammates can take care of stuff. I can worry about getting this, so I can take advantage of these cards later on as well. Yeah, absolutely.
And then finally, Uncanny X-Men showed up in every single X-Men deck. Not surprising. It's really powerful, and the X-Men allies are pretty good. It'll be really neat to see what this is starting to look like once we actually have three times as many X-Men allies as we have right now.
Mm.
you know, they're, as opposed to, let's say, Guardians or Web Warriors, where there's lots of great gray allies, there's actually, you know, relatively few great gray allies in X-Men at the moment.
Right. Well, that works so well with some of those X-Men who, you know, they cost one less if you are playing an X-Men, if you are an X-Men hero, so that makes it even easier.
Right, the Colossus ally is great. Angel's pretty strong as well. And but anyway, we still don't have a ton of X-Men allies, I guess is the point.
Right,
You're often throwing them in just because they say X-Men, not because you think they're going to be super useful. Right, yeah. Lots of us had Professor X, lots of the X-Men players had Professor X this round that was maybe helpful just to get an extra activation or get that three threat removal that you needed, but not because it was critical overall.
Right.
And you couldn't use the Confuse.
Exactly. Not easily.
Yes, not easily. You had to really, I don't think I ever got to the point where I had managed to get two counters of any type on there.
Yeah, I definitely didn't.
Miles would have been able to.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So this would have been a funny Miles round. All right, so well, let's look at a few of the things. Again, won't go into too much detail, but we saw, so Nebula, we saw the top performer was actually the top player in the training gowns this round. So Osnedge, I don't know how to pronounce that one. But they played Nebula and kind of just did all the good Nebula stuff, being able to flip and use the tactics. No, that's not what they're called. What are they called?
Techniques, right?
Techniques. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And then they commented, you know, Nebula was a good pick for this round because this Green Goblin's pretty predictable overall, which is nice to have for playing Nebula.
Well, and when you have that opportunity to flip down almost every turn, she can use her techniques when she wants to and not waste them or something.
Yep. And then Gamora was next, and we saw Kadavica coming out of Flight 4 in first, and Rekatol coming out of Flight 1 in second. Both of them actually went with a lot more allies than I'm used to seeing in a Gamora deck. Gamora tends to really favor events, so that was kind of neat to see them do that. And we saw, you know, one player went more with Welcome Aboard, and the other player went more with Make the Call in terms of how they were thinking about how they're going to be using their allies. Storm was next. UNC Dave in Flight 1 got first. I got second, and Just Tom got third. And again, we didn't get UNC Dave's, but, you know, most of us really prioritized the allies and tried to take advantage of that plus one attack, because that is the... that's the responsible thing to do in this situation.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's lots of subtleties in how you might want to do that differently, but we're not gonna analyze that to death. And then your pool of people with Spider was Astrodar out of Flight 1 and out of my alliance. Finally, first time ever, he wins the Astrodar Pre-Memorial Award for fewest aspect cards. In an aspect deck. I should
have taken two aspect cards out.
I know. Well, so this is really, really funny, right? So he had five aspect cards. Mr. Wooby, or however you might pronounce that, had six, and you had seven. So all the folks who chose Spider really didn't take a lot of aspect cards. So just kind of took those critical leadership cards from the perspective of what you were trying to do.
And I think that works well with, you know, most of the Web Warrior heroes. You're going to have that ability because their allies are all gray. So you can do a lot of focusing on that.
Right. And this is, you know, this was a round where Hobie could do a decent amount of work, because there were definitely some cards where you saw a lot of boost icons, but it wasn't that consistent. But it wasn't like against the Loki round where we saw so many with zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, I think everybody took a kind of overall relatively similar approach, is because you're really just focusing on the spider kit. The extra allies are there to help you, but they're not the critical part of the strategy.
Absolutely.
I don't know, anything you notice about the people who were also doing this?
Like, I think, like you said, they're fairly similar I mean, I honestly, I just clicked up Astrodars and I'm like, that looks like, oh, no, that's not my deck. It's similar, but it's not quite.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Cool. And then Cyclops was next, and we saw Chuchanas out of Flight 2, AirD&D out of Flight 3, and Energy Thief out of Flight 4, getting 1, 2, and 3. AirD&D shared their deck and was really trying to recur Polaris and Nightcrawler. So Nightcrawler is, you know, once you have the infrastructure set up, Nightcrawler is a really cheap way to get some blocks, because you can spend a resource to bring it back to your hand and prevent all the damage. And then Polaris also, when she comes into play, you give an X-Men a tough status card. So those are really great allies. And because Cyclops can do off aspect things with allies, you can take right. advantage of some of those things. We were playing leadership, but who cares? You get to bring those protection allies in. No one cares, right?
No one cares.
Colossus was next up with Amerithus out of Flight 2, Opus out of Flight 3, and Ion out of Flight 3 getting 1, 2, and 3. And I appreciated that. So there's, I don't know if you've ever played around with this, but somebody on one of the other Discords has built a Marvel Champions simulator that does a whole bunch of decision making. And then they do lots of competitions to see who can come up with the most successful deck and other things like that. It's pretty neat, but Amerithus actually, you know, before actually playing the games, tried to put the deck through the paces on there and said, oh yeah, this looks like it's working okay, before really kind of engaging with it, which I thought was neat.
And it showed, it did. I mean, best Colossus deck, so that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I mean, the thing is, of course, that thing doesn't prioritize the scoring that we worry Absolutely. About, but in terms of just being able to show that the deck can handle a scenario well, that's right. certainly a very viable way to do it. And if you're a person who likes to think about your decks ahead of time and then see if they're actually viable, you know, you have to, of course, hope that the logic that's been programmed into this takes advantage of some of the things that you do. But anyway, I thought that was a neat approach. Yeah, and then, yeah, tons of allies. So, and Uncanny X-Men. Most of the folks that play X-Men seem to tend to add Danger Room Training, which is a one cost leadership upgrade that gives one thwart, one attack, and one hit point. And so this is, you know, better than basically any of the equivalent ones we saw across the Avengers or Guardians or anything like that. It's a really... because that one extra hit point also means that they're going to get an extra activation out of the extra stats that they got. So I think, you know, I think those multiplayer Voltron decks that people might make so that you can get access to all of the upgrades will be really neat to see what sort of things people cook up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, you can throw honorary X-Men on the Captain Marvel ally, and you know, all those things could probably get pretty fun. Star-Lord, who was probably the hero whose performance I was most impressed by when I kind of saw how the top performers did. You know, I love Star-Lord, so I was really excited to see. But so we got Jarrett got first out of Flight 1, Baby Corn got second, and Matthew Noodles got third. And so all these folks were coming out of Flight 1 and did quite well. Matthew Noodles had a big old 50-cent, 50-card deck with lots of allies. Importantly, you know, as opposed to any of the other Guardian heroes that we see, where the Guardian heroes tend to be pretty light on the aspect cards because the Guardian's allies are mostly gray. Kind of similar to what you see with the Web Warriors. Star-Lord kind of breaks that because Star-Lord can make everybody a Guardian ally and so take advantage of Guardian synergy while doing other stuff. So you can basically shove anybody you want into one of those decks and it still counts as a Guardian.
Right.
So lots of command teams. We saw the Venom ally show up in two of these decks, so in Jarrett and Baby Corn's, and we saw Baby Corn also had the symbiote suit, and you also had the symbiote suit. So we saw a bunch of people having these. Either you can think of them as late game, or if you think of it as, you know, the deck itself, the encounter deck itself was maybe not that scary, taking that extra card was a who cares, the advantage I'm getting out of this is way too good.
Absolutely, yeah.
Next was Ghost Spider, just one player. Stitchblade did quite well coming out of Flight 3. Ironheart was, I think, one of the other heroes that performed exceedingly well in the what we see in the top three. So Kakita Jamie out of Flight 3, Innsmouth Bear, maybe his first appearance in this. All right. Good work. Good work,
exactly.
Innsmouth Bear.
Absolutely.
coming out of Flight 4, and then Pray for Mojo, second of their name, coming out of Flight 3. And, you know, we already talked about the Ironheart stuff, kind of what to expect. You're really tending to prioritize getting those counters built up so that you can flip to forms really quick. Lots of people tend to use the, I always forget what the card is called, the one that lets you combine all your...
Mass Attack?
Yeah, Mass Attack is the one that's all the allies. The attack card that lets you combine all your stats.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that.
Anyway, that's a pretty common Ironheart one because her stats are pretty spectacular by the end. But we didn't actually see that coming out of these folks, which is interesting. But next up was Spider-Ham. One of the things we see with Spider-Ham is Clarity of Purpose, which is a new resource card that only costs one, but you have to take a damage. Of course, it synergizes. It showed up with Spider-Ham, right?
And
it synergizes with Spider-Ham exceedingly well, to the point that Raphael N., who's in Flight 1, had three copies of it. You only get to use one, but just making sure you get it early. Pack Attack CB coming out of Flight 3 got second and had two copies of it, and GJ Scott, 35th of their name, in Flight 3 had one copy of it. So obviously everybody really emphasized it, but we saw that Raphael N., who got the top spot, really prioritized it, made sure that it was going to come out.
Right.
Makes a ton of sense.
You're essentially, you take that damage and you're getting two resources out of it with Spider-Ham. That works great. That's wonderful.
And then, kind of like all the other Web Warriors, we saw just a crap ton of gray allies for all these Spider-Ham builds. Next up was Ms. Marvel and Andy Leedy coming out of Flight 2 got top. Conspiracy coming out of Flight 2 got second, and was just kind of really talking about using, you know, playing assess the situation multiple times in a turn using Ms. Marvel's ability to then get really big hands. And that's pretty fun.
Awesome.
And then Dave, 1,309th of their name, trying to make the call rapid response and had Haymaker, which is,
oh yeah. Wow.
Very fun.
I can't think of the last time I used that card.
Well, and so, you know, there's two copies of Power in all of us in here. So Haymaker doing three damage, but being able to recur it and potentially get it out for cheap makes sense. Leadership doesn't have a ton of actual attack cards.
Right.
And of course, the big thing with Ms. Marvel is you get the, and I always have to look at, because I never remember which one is which, but you get Embiggen, which increases the damage from an attack by two.
Two, yeah.
It's only single use per turn, but it's still, you know, it's really increasing how impactful Haymaker can be.
Yeah, you can do a lot with that. I mean, with her, with all the champions, having that ability to even throw go for champions out there to help you and your allies for a round to not take damage is big.
And then finally, Nova, top coming out of Flight 2 was Kamehameha, and then Zizors, maybe, and Dataki coming out of Flight 4 getting second and third. So, one of the things we also did see, and I didn't mention it, but because everybody had a lot of allies, there tend to be a decent number of strength and numbers kicking around as well.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is the only deck I saw that actually included Regroup, which is a bit surprising. Because there's decent amount of attack that's going to happen on you. But yeah, so this is one of the few people that I saw actually using regroup. And then always happy to have a sighting of the Atom Warlock ally. That is just one of my favorite allies in the game. I love that ally. Especially if you get team training down and can just use him endlessly. And
right, oh, absolutely.
He's so efficient. He's so efficient. I love it. So it was really hard to do awards this time, so I didn't really try to dig too much into the awards. I think my favorite, most surprisingly effective deck, but is more surprisingly effective tech, was all of you who decided to go with Venom Ally or Symbiote Suit. I appreciated that. And, you know, right, that's a lot of really high performing decks made that choice. So that's pretty fun.
Out there, yeah. And Ashradar finally winning his own award.
Oh my God. He can relax. I wonder if he's going to retire or take a break or who knows what.
It's over now.
yeah. So that's fun. I wonder if he, I don't think he sought it out because he included a med lab in his deck. So that's not something you put in if you're trying to get the award.
But he pulled it off.
That's a convenience card. That's not a necessary card.
Absolutely.
I actually played around with it a bit as well, but I don't know. I just found that the rounds were just a bit too short. So Medlab is a one that lets you recur an ally that defeats itself through consequential damage, and then it comes into play exhausted. So you have to not only use up all of its resources, but then you, when you get it back, it has to either have an ability that requires it not being exhausted, or you got to wait. So with the decks, with the rounds just being as short as they could, I just didn't find I was getting use out of
that lab. It takes too much time.
Oh, but it does. No, I was thinking, does the Venom Ally take consequential damage for its ability? But that's not actually consequential damage. But that would be a neat thing that you could do. So, but anyway, that's not consequential damage. Never mind. I thought I saw something, but it wasn't there. Anything worth noting that we didn't have a chance to check in with about the decks?
I don't think so. It was a fun round. It was absolutely crazy seeing all the different heroes and everything, but it was a fun round for everyone to just kind of go crazy with so many different options and everything as we enter into this No More Avengers season.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun.
Well, and you know, despite the fact that there were 12 heroes, you know, you could still have discussions about strategy in terms of how you're going to approach Venom.
Right.
And lots of commonalities about, you know, going wide and using this kind of card to finish it. Obviously, you know, Star-Lord had the folks that were using Star-Lord all used, what is it, Blaze of Glory?
Everyone gets added amounts, but then they take damage at the end of the turn.
Right. And so that's a great leadership one. And then there's the ability to actually flip back with Blaze of Glory, flip over to Alter Ego, and then all of a sudden nobody is a guardian anymore because all the allies being guardians on Star-Lord only happens when you're in Star-Lord form. So that's kind of a neat thing to be able to do. But Blaze of Glory is just kind of an exceedingly large amount of damage. It's kind of doing something similar to what Storm's trying to do with her weather deck.
Right.
Except for you can have a much bigger turn, right? It's quite viable to use Blaze of Glory to advance to Goblin 2 and then defeat them all in the same turn. Especially with Sliding Shot on top of that. Just those turns. Go ahead.
I'm always afraid of playing Star-Lord. I love the idea of his kit and everything, but it always terrifies me, especially in the solo champions league.
Well, you know, it is interesting because the folks that were playing the slightly faster rounds, you actually did see a decent number of them having higher than 40 card decks because you're kind of trying to potentially set yourself up to not actually get that extra encounter card because you were going to finish it just in time. So that's where I was too. I ended up going with a 45 card deck just to hopefully avoid having to take that encounter card. And with Star-Lord, it means what cards are probably going to be in your hand on that final turn, that if you're going to be able to do your daring escapes to get the extra encounter cards and all those other things on that final turn, you really have a sense of if you're going to be set up to do that.
Right.
Star-Lord. Love him. All right. Well, Tyler, so grateful that you joined me even in your sixth state. I hope that this has given you more vigor and vim, and that you're just like, I'm gonna be so healthy for the day, and then I'm gonna fall asleep
Absolutely.
a miserable mess finally at the end of the day.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. It's been fun. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, it's been a while since we've actually had a chance to check in, and well, we didn't even talk about you being a world champion.
World champion. Yeah, but that's okay. You took your revenge on us afterwards.
Right. We took our
We were
lumps.
we it was funny. After we were talking in our alliance chat like a week or so back, and Innsmouth there after it was actually after this round. We're almost in the semifinals again because there's a loser's bracket for the
Right.
I can't think of the name of it. Anyways, so we're almost, if we can do well this round, we can make it to the semifinals and maybe have a rematch with you guys in the finals.
Oh, that would be very fun.
And so I created a little story. It's like, in his frustration from losing the chance to back-to-back championships, Josaru calls Loki to come and helps
Oh,
him create
yes.
chaos in order to get back at Ursa Major, and the Gamorreans take them out in the first round of the season. Following that loss, Ursa Major ends up tending to its wounds a little too literally, as one of its team is taken out by a car. Was
Oh.
this the limo that Greg asked for as part of the Road to Nowhere podcast recording? We may never know.
Oh, that is a good insight.
I mean, we're just building this wonderful story to hopefully come back
Yeah,
and face you guys off again in the championship.
well, speaking of, it sounds like Greg the Grandmaster is slowly healing and kind of
Yes.
getting up to some capacities that he didn't have right away. So, Greg, get better
Keep getting better, absolutely.
and it's nice to have you back running the Grandmaster Arena again and all that sort of fun stuff.
Absolutely. It's a joy. So
Well,
good luck everyone in the next round, I guess.
yeah, well, thanks for joining. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time on the Road to Nowhere.
How do you know my